ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय हरे कृष्ण Tonight, we are celebrating the beginning of the next stage of our yatra. Which is to imbibe deep within our hearts, meditate within our minds of the blessings, the grace that has come to us in so many forms over the last 2 weeks. And carry them wherever we may be going in the world. Krishna never takes a single step out of Vrindavan. Krishna is none different than his name. Tatra gayanti mad bhakta. Krishna tells Sri Narada Muni that wherever my devotees come together sincerely to remember me by chanting my names, I am there. Wherever the spirit of Vrindavan is manifested, that is Vrindavan, not an imagination. In truth, Srila Prabhupada writes that many of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's closest associates never came to Vrindavan. Gadadhar Pandit was directly Srimati Radharani. Incarnate within this world. Swarup Damodar Goswami is Lalita Sakhi. Ramananda Rai is Vishakha Devi. So many others. They never physically came to Vrindavan. But they always lived in Vrindavan. Vrindavan is very much a state of our hearts. Srila Prabhupada lived in Vrindavan for about 6 years, Radha Damodar Temple. And he traveled around the world. It's not that he left Vrindavan. He was bringing Vrindavan to wherever he went. And we saw in that incredible film by Sri Yadubar Prabhu that historical occasion where Srila Prabhupada, for the first time in the history, came with a sizable group of pilgrims from all over the world. As far as we know, this never happened before. People from Europe, from Africa, from America, from Australia, from Japan, in an old Indian bus. And by Krishna's grace, I was sleeping on the bank of the Yamuna in those days, and I happened to hear about their coming, and I was there to greet them. And now Vrindavan is a very international place in the world. When Yudhisthira Maharaj was speaking to Vidura, Bhavadvida Bhagavatas Tirathabhuta Swayam Vibhu, that great personalities, they are holy places personified. Because they carry Krishna within their hearts, wherever they go, Krishna is manifest, and all the holy places of pilgrimage are present there. Lord Chaitanya, he is Krishna in the Mahabhava of Sri Radha, but also is in the role of a devotee to teach us by his example the important principles of bhakti that we all need to imbibe within our lives. And Lord Chaitanya in Puri taught by his example how to surround himself with sincere loving devotees and remain always in the Vrindavan consciousness through hearing together, chanting together, serving together. Vrindavan is a place that Lord Brahma, through his vision, after he came out of his illusion, he understood that this is the supreme, most intimate abode of the Lord. And because everyone is conscious of pleasing Krishna, everyone loves each other. Even inimical animals, like tigers and deers, are in love with each other. Because they have a common purpose to please Krishna. Spiritual society is not just the form of the institution, because the form of the institution is a necessary instrument to facilitate loving relationships where Krishna is the center. And making Krishna the center is not a very abstract concept. It's very practical. It means that what makes Krishna happy will always have precedent, priority, over what makes me happy or what makes us happy. The principle of the Bhagavatam is when you water the root of the tree, every part of the tree is nourished and satisfied. But unfortunately, if all the different parts of the trees are thinking, I want it for me, each leaf is thinking, I'm the most important. Each flower is thinking, no, no, it's me. And the branches are thinking, no, me. It's a very diseased tree. But when everyone agrees, Srila Prabhupada gives the example that every part of the body works together for the whole body by supplying nourishment to the stomach. And when you give nourishment to the stomach, every part of the body gains. On a spiritual level, Krishna is the center. Everyone has their differences. But when we somehow or other agree that to please Krishna, to please Guru is prominent over what I want, And it's the only thing that's really for my well-being or anyone else's true well-being. Then we have a very, very strong, beautiful spiritual society. We were discussing yesterday devotional service in the mode of ignorance, passion, goodness, and transcendental devotional service. Devotional service in the mode of ignorance and passion, we described them in some detail yesterday, but one of the characteristics is a separatist mentality. And the definition of a separatist mentality is that we put priority over what I want than what pleases Krishna. Samsidhir Haditoshanam. Maya covers up the consciousness in such a way to delude us into such an insane state that we think that making myself happy by satisfying the temporary demands of the mind and senses is happiness. When we come to spiritual path, we learn Samsiddhir Haditoshanam, what makes Krishna happiness is what is actually going to make us true happy. Because living for Krishna's happiness is bhakti. It's very simple. Bhakti is to live for Krishna's happiness through service. And there are 9 processes of devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting and remembering. And our societies are actually spiritual to the extent that we come together with these common principles. And that's the challenge. That's the responsibility that Srila Prabhupada and our previous acharyas gave us. Each one of us individually to try to create the energy collectively where egoism and selfishness is put aside for the higher principle. In the spiritual world, there's arguments. During the Govardhan Parikrama, we've been discussing some of these arguments between gopis. There are different camps of gopis. Nearby is Sakistali, the place of Chandravali. And then not far is Radhakund, the place of Sri Radha. All of the apparent disputes, even between Radha, Krishna, those arguments and disputes only bring about deeper, higher pleasure of Krishna, deeper, higher pleasure of the devotees, greater respect and intimacy for each other, and appreciation. If our arguments or disputes are not having that effect, then they're not really based on a spiritual foundation. But sometimes Maya, the illusory energy, gets us all mixed up. And we act very materially in a way that's very displeasing to Krishna. But the ahankar, the false ego, makes us believe, because we want to believe, that this is what Krishna wants. This is what Srila Prabhupada wants. This is what I am the instrument empowered to do. Vrindavan is a place where even in the dynamics of arguments and disagreements, there's love, there's affection, because everything is genuinely without selfish desire for the pleasure of Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada taught us, wherever we have that consciousness, we can create Vrindavan. In a purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that we have a community, New Vrindavan, which is non-different than Goloka Vrindavan, because the spirit of keeping Krishna in the center of service. So I was living at New Vrindavan when that purport came out, and we were really kind of falsely proud. But then I saw another purport where Prabhupada said, every one of our temples is non-different than Goloka Vrindavan. And I understood, it's not only our temples. Anywhere there is a devotee who's genuinely, wherever devotees are coming together for the purpose of service to Krishna, that Vrindavan manifests. So starting tomorrow, the second phase of our yatra begins, where you take the spirit of Vrindavan with all sincerity and prayer at heart. You take it into your heart and we share it together wherever we go, and we share with the world. Because at a time in this where there is so much conflict and so much fear, suspicion, hatred, greed, lust, envy, it's like a desert. The oasis of the spirit of Vrindavan is what everybody is longing to find deep down. Some know it and some don't. And we have come. And many of us, we come to Vrindavan and we get a little spiritually surcharged, but then when we actually surrender to chanting the holy names and performing our sadhana and doing seva for Guru and for the Vaishnavas, we actually experience Vrindavan even more in separation. The yatra is not a vacation just to get away from material life. It's a pilgrimage for the purification of deeply being influenced and affected by the land of Shri Radha Govinda, by the place absolutely permeated by Krishna's leelas, by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the six Goswamis and all the acharyas and all the saints that have lived here and eternally reside here. And to take all of those blessings, that all that nourishment and strength, and share it with each other and with the world. So I welcome you to the second phase of our yatra. But as far as this yatra, we've come as far as Radha Kund in our parikrama. Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, when he was excavating Shama Kund, after some time, he saw that people were washing their pots and their utensils and washing their clothes in Radha Kund and Shama Kund because there was just no other water supplies around. And Raghunath Das Goswami was thinking that this Radha Kund and Shama Kund, it is the holiest of all holy places. She'd come there to worship Srimati Radharani and Shyam Sundar, to beg and plead for their blessings, not wash our clothes, our pots. So he began to dig a well. He had some Brijabasis digging. And as they were digging, 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 they hit some rock. From the rock, blood splurted out. So they stopped digging. And they told Raghunath Das Goswami, he said, stop. And that, I don't know, when Raghunath Das Goswami only slept 1 to 1.5 hours in 24 hours, I don't know exactly where that was, but when he was resting, he had a vision where Giddi Govardhan, who is Krishna, and the various limbs of Krishna are there in Giddi Govardhan. He said, the reason that rock was bleeding is because you struck my tongue, the tongue of Govardhan. Now, take out that stone, which is my tongue, install it, and allow the people to come to have darshan. And you'll see in your Radhakund Parikrama the tongue of Govardhan. And it said by circumambulating 7 times around, it is equal to doing the full Govardhan Parikrama. Of course, devotees do both. Every way we can somehow or other get purified and try to please Krishna and be together is incredible opportunity. From Radhakund, we come to Kusum Sarovar. Next to Kusum Sarovar is a place called Ashokvan, wherein Radha Krishna's eternal Leela, Krishna decorates Srimati Radharani's hair. There are many places in Vrindavan like this. Seva Kunj, Mangar in Barsana, Ashokvan, Sringarvat in Vrindavan, where we meditate upon Krishna performing very simple menial type of services for the pleasure of Sri Radha. The reciprocation of love. The lover is conquered by the beloved, and the beloved is conquered by the lover. In the material sense, everyone wants to conquer. In the spiritual sense, everyone wants to be conquered. Because when you're conquered, you conquer. But you don't want to conquer, you simply want to be conquered. Devotees want to be conquered by Krishna's love. And in the process, the devotee conquers Krishna. There's also Pushpavan. Pushpavan on the banks of Sri Kusum Sarovar, where there was a beautiful flower garden where Srimati Radharani and her dearmost gopis would collect flowers to make beautiful garlands and decorations to render loving services to Krishna at Radhakund and Shyamkund. Just across from the Parikrama path, small distance from Kusum Sarovar is Nardakund, which is within Nardavan. The story is Narada Muni, who is directly son of Brahma. We understand from Srimad Bhagavatam, he tells how he came to Krishna consciousness. In his previous life, he was the son of a very simple maidservant living in a forest. They really had nothing materially. At one time, some great Bhaktivedanta, sages came to that forest to hear and chant for the 4 months of Chaturmasya, the rainy season. And under the guidance of his mother, the little child was doing simple services. He didn't have education, he didn't have skills, but he, by the association of these people and by just hearing them, he wanted to serve them. Shushrusho shudadanas yavasu divakatashuchi ruchi syan mahat sevya vipra punya tirtana sevanat. The Bhagavad tells us that when we develop a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna, Krishna is so pleased that he cleanses our heart of all unwanted things and awakens love. And that attraction for hearing and chanting comes when we have an enthusiasm to sincerely serve great souls. This little boy was hardly 5 years old. But in the association of these people, he loved their satsang, just to be with them and to serve them. And one time, because he developed such an attachment, he asked them if he could take some of their mahaprasad. And after eating that prasad and serving them so nicely, he developed a thirst for hearing what they were saying. And after they left, he was so spiritually surcharged. His mother was struck by a serpent when she went out to milk a cow and died. She was a widow. He was all alone living in a jungle. Hardly 5 years old, and now he doesn't even have a mother. Of course he loved his mother. But due to the association of these saints, he was so empowered that he understood this is Krishna's arrangement. And he spent the rest of his life seeking Krishna. And at one point, he actually... he went through the jungles, he went into the cities, and then to the towns, then into the villages, then into the agricultural fields, then back into the jungles, into such deep jungles that no human beings were anywhere around, searching for Krishna. And after drinking some water, he meditated and meditated, and by Krishna's grace, Krishna revealed himself within Narada Muni's heart. And Narada Muni fell in love with that Krishna. Of course, he wasn't Narada Muni yet. He was just a little boy. And then that vision disappeared, and the little boy, he was so disrupted with separation, he tried everything and everything, the same formula of meditation, the same water, but Krishna didn't come. Krishna wanted to teach him. It's not by a mechanical process that we could know God. It's by the grace of God. There is no other way. Mechanical processes, we can get powers. We may even get some liberation. But to love God, only by grace of God. But he was so sincere. He kept trying. And Krishna reciprocates with our sincerity. And he spoke to the little boy and said, in this life you will not see me. You will remember that form, and in the deep, deep mood of separation, you will be crying for me throughout your life. And in the process through this separation, you will be totally purified. And in your next life, you will become the great sage Narada Muni. For he was born to sing the holy names of Krishna. He could travel anywhere, anytime, to Vaikuntha, to Swargaloka, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, to the earth planet or anywhere else. And his purpose wherever he was simply to give Krishna. And who were his disciples? Countless. We know of a few of them. Prahlad, Dhruva, the Prachetas. Mugrari, some of the greatest of all great personalities were the disciples of Narada. But he through his experience, he wanted to actually witness and enter into Krishna's loving pastimes with Sri Radha and the gopis. Because Narada Muni, after seeing everything and knowing everything, understood this is the actual highest revelation of the Absolute. So Narada Muni approached Sadashiva, the original form of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva said, you should go to Vrindavan and you should worship Brinda Devi, the presiding goddess of Vrindavan. And by her grace, everything is possible. So Narada went to Brahmakund in Vrindavan. And there, Brinda Devi approached him and told him that if you want to enter into the pastimes of Krishna and gopis, if you want to see them, you have to follow in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. And by her inspiration, she gave him some mantras to chant. And he came to Govardhan Hill, to this place that is called Naradavan. And there, he meditated on this mantra in deep, deep feelings of separation. And when his attitude was completely compatible, Brinda Devi came back and told Narada Muni, come with me. They went to the northwestern corner of Kusum Sarovar. Brinda Devi had Narada Muni take his bath. When he came out from the nectarine waters of Kusum Sarovar, he had the bhava and the body of a gopi, Naradi gopi. And Brinda Devi then took him to Radhakund, where he could actually witness the beautiful pastimes of Sri Sri Radha Madhava. Sri Radha Madhava told Narada Muni that now you should stay here at your Narada Kund at Govardhan and write bhakti sutras. Share your realizations with the world in the science of bhakti. Narada Muni expressed that I have been cursed by daksha that I cannot stay in any place for any length of time. And Krishna told him that Vrindavan is not considered within the three worlds. You can stay here at Narada Kund forever. He went to the southeastern corner of Kusum Sarovar, took his bath, and from Naradi Gopi, he became Narada Muni and resides at Narada Kund. A little further, we come to Shamkutir, which is a very, very special place. The Srimad Bhagavatam tells a particular story that one time Krishna and Balaram were with gopis at Shamkutir. There is a throne there called the Ratna Singhasan, a magnificent jeweled throne that Radharani would sit down with Krishna. So one day, Krishna, Balaram, and many gopis were there. It was Holika Purnima, just after Shivaratri, the day actually Lord Chaitanya appeared, Gaur Purnima. Krishna and Balaram, they were decorated so very, very beautifully. And for the pleasure of the gopis, which is ultimately the greatest pleasure for themselves, the two of them sang. And they were singing all the melodious notes of all the scales of music simultaneously. This only Krishna can do. Can you imagine the beauty of that song? We hear about Krishna's flute, the love of his heart pouring through those holes and filling the atmosphere and entering into the devotees' hearts very personally and intimately, singing to each of every one of the devotees. In a similar way, when Krishna sang, he's the original source of all musical skills. He was singing, and he and Balaram, they could sing all the different notes simultaneously in perfect melodious harmony with each other to create a song that was utterly mesmerizing. Depending on what modes of nature we are in, what country we're from, what our particular mindset is, some people like to listen to opera singers, some people like to hear bhajan singers, some people like to hear rock and roll singers, some people like to hear ghazal singers or whatever. All different kinds of music in this world. But people are very much mesmerized by sweet, beautiful voices. Whatever beautiful voice may be anywhere, it is not even a fraction of a single ray of the infinite sun of the beauty of Krishna and Balaram's voices. What to speak when they're singing together. I'm thinking if we just do these anakut cookings like yesterday and we get enough cow dung in our ears and our lungs and our eyes, maybe we'll be able to hear that singing someday. The cow dung smoke. As they were singing, the gopis, and they were so enchanted. And gopis, they are the ultimate supreme singers and musicians. But they were so enchanted by this that their garlands were coming off, their clothes were becoming loose, and their hair was becoming undone. They were mesmerized, entranced by absolute bliss, because Krishna and Balaram were singing just for them. And each gopi, Krishna, Balaram, are singing just for me. And the moon, full moon, was rising, and Krishna and Balaram were praising the moon arrival and the beautiful stars in the sky. And Vrinda Devi, to enhance the charm of the satisfaction of Krishna and the gopis, created blooming jasmines with such a sweet fragrance and a mild breeze that the bees were going mad. The ultimate enchantment. In the middle of it all, suddenly appeared Shankarchuda. Shankarchuda was sent by Kamsa. He was a very, very powerful demon. He was an associate of Kuvera, the treasurer of the devas. And therefore, he had incredible wealth. Wealth that could never be fathomed or conceived within our earthly existence. And within that wealth, he had beauty. He had incredible physical and mental strength. And more than that, he had insatiable ego. Garga Samhita tells us that Shankarachuda, he just wanted to conquer everyone in all directions. And he heard about Kamsa being a great, powerful king whose arms were as strong as 10,000 elephants. So he challenged Kamsa to fight. Oh, they became such great enemies. They were fighting with their clubs. They were pounding each other day after day after day after day. They didn't eat. They didn't sleep. They were just fighting. They were so angry. They were so hateful. Their only purpose was to kill their opponent. And when their clubs broke from so much abuse, they started beating each other with their fists for day after day after day, and neither one could get an upper hand over the other. Then Narada Muni came and said, neither of you could defeat the other, so there's no use in your fighting, but there will be a common enemy that you both have. And that common enemy, either you will kill him or he will kill you. So there's no use in your fighting. So then they became friends. This is material existence. Kamsa invited Shankarachuda to come and live with him in Mathura and be his special guest. So they lived. And then he was sent. And Shankarachuda came. He arrived here at Govardhan Hill in Shyamkutir, where there's beautiful kadamba trees and tamal trees and blooming jasmine, and the full moon is blazing and Krishna and Balaram are singing. It was the most beautiful environment. Suddenly this Shankarachuda appears. He had a special feature that he was really proud of. He had the most precious of all jewels that somehow or other he acquired, which was worth indescribable wealth. And in his pride, he kept that jewel on his head. He wore it. And the Srimad Bhagavatam explains that he picked up a stick, and totally ignoring Krishna Balaram, he ordered the gopis to go with him. Very harshly. Abrasively, that you are all for me and me alone. And he started, come, go this direction. And they were screaming out, Rama, Krishna, Rama, Krishna. He was out from here. He was chasing them to the north. This is the quality that we are vulnerable to. When a person has great wealth, great influence, we become prone to thinking, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. And in this case, Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas explain, when you really get in this enjoying mentality, you think that everything is for my enjoyment. And the gopis were the most beautiful ladies in all of creation. And he could not tolerate thinking anybody else except me could enjoy such beautiful ladies. It was his entitlement. You are mine. You come with me. And he was forcing the gopis in the northern direction. And the gopis were crying out, Ram Krishna, Ram Krishna. And Krishna and Balaramji, they said, we will come, we will protect you. And they both picked up big logs and went to chase after Shankarachuda. Meanwhile, as he was already taking the gopis into the forest, like a malicious thief will steal small little
helpless calves. That's how he was taking them away. Krishna Balaram came charging toward him. And when he saw them, he realized, I have to get out of here. So he ran away. Krishna entrusted the gopis to Lord Balaram, and he went to chase after Shankarachuda. Meanwhile, Balaramji was pacifying the gopis, and they were singing Krishna's glories. And Krishna chased after. It says they went a distance, but it didn't seem like a distance. And Krishna caught him, and with his fist. Now, any part of Krishna's body can do any other part, because Krishna is inconceivable and infinite. With his fist, he just punched Shankarachuda on the head, and his head came off. Sri Krishna Bhagavan Ki Jai. He was liberated. Then Krishna took that jewel and brought it back. And in front of all the Brajagopis, he presented the jewel to Sri Balaramji, his elder brother. A little later, when Krishna and Radharani were in Shamkutir, enjoying their beautiful loving pastimes there. And then, some time passed, Balaram gave the jewel to Madhu Mangal to present it to Srimati Radharani. Because even Balaram knew there is no greater way to serve and please Krishna than to give the highest satisfaction to Radharani. So that became Radharani's jewel, which she made a necklace and wore it around her neck, according to our acharyas. And it's a long story we will not get into today, but later on in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that same jewel of Shankarachuda that was presented to Balaram and then to Sri Radharani became the Shamantaka jewel, which was a very beautiful story. Shankarachuda represents proneness to name and fame and the desire for sense gratification under the plea of devotion. This could be a devastating demon within our hearts. To desire our own personal sense gratification, to try to manipulate situations in the name of Krishna's service for our own sense gratification. That tendency is very much within any neophyte devotee, and even advanced devotees. It's there until we're extremely elevated and purified. The proneness to want to manipulate, facilitate our own sense gratification in the plea of devotional service. And that proneness toward name and fame. People in this world think that getting prestige, fame, or wealth, property, money, that it will give them strength. But real strength is a Goswami. A Goswami is one who doesn't need any of those things. A person who is actually Atmarama, self-satisfied. If we understand the principle of Rupa Goswami, Yukta Vairagya, properly, then we can have all these things but we use them as instruments of Krishna's service, always remembering nothing is mine. I'm just a custodian of Krishna's property, and my only moral right is to use it for Krishna's service. Whether it's my intelligence, my ability, my wealth, or my influence. But if we don't have that consciousness, what usually happens is the more wealth we have, the more name and fame we have, the weaker we become spiritually. Because like Shankarachuda, we think I am the enjoyer. And like Shankarachuda, we become envious of someone who is enjoying what we think we should be enjoying, or who we think we should be controlling. For one who is addicted to the idea of being a controller, to be frustrated in our attempts is extremely painful. Kama esha, krodha esha. From lust comes anger. Dhyayato vidyate. The Bhagavad Gita extends from contemplating the objects of the senses, lust develops. When lust is frustrated, anger. From anger, our mind becomes bewildered. We don't know what we're supposed to do or what we're not supposed to do. When the mind is bewildered, our intelligence is lost. And when our intelligence is lost, even good advice, it's hard to take. We act in ways that are so terribly destructive to ourselves, to our loved ones, to the world. Therefore, Krishna explains, from the very beginning we have to curb these tendencies before it comes to that point. Shankarachuda. But like the gopis, when our devotion starts getting dragged away by these demons within us for wealth, name and fame, the proneness to enjoy in the name of devotional service our own selfish desires, when we find these things happening like the gopis, what did they do? They helplessly, from their hearts, understood that the only way that we can be protected from this violation, from this corruption, is to loudly cry out the holy name. And then Krishna will come. Because he's not different than his name. He may come in different ways too. He may come through good guidance of another Vaishnava. He may come through realization and revelation. But ultimately, Krishna, by his grace, he kills these demons within our hearts. And then he presents the crest jewel. The Purushartha Siromani. Lord Chaitanya said, Prema Bhakti, unmotivated, uninterrupted, ecstatic love for Krishna is the crown jewel of all realizations, the ultimate aspiration of every heart. And that is given by Sri Radharani and Krishna when we Sharanagati, when we take shelter through the holy names, through the Srimad Bhagavatam, through the Vaishnavas, and through our Seva. A little down is Gwalpokara, where Krishna and Balaram and
gopas would take prasad, and from there, Krishna would slip away to Sri Radha Kund to meet with Sri Radha and gopis. There's a nice story that Madhu Mangal, a Brahmin cowherd boy, who very much was a liking eating prasad, especially laddu, he would go with Krishna to Surya Kund, where he would be like a priest and perform different pujas where Sri Radharani was worshipping Surya Dev. And he would get dakshina of laddus. So he came back with Krishna to Gwalpokar and he had all these laddus wrapped up in a little sack, a little cloth. He wore it on his dhoti. And Balaram was there and gopas. And one of them stole the bag of laddus, grabbed it from him. And he tried to get it back, and before he could even reach that person, he gave the laddus to all the other boys, and the boys were eating it, and he was very upset. He said, "This is the property of a Brahmin. You have stolen the property of a Brahmin. I have the power to curse you for this." And they all laughed so hard as they were eating his laddus. And while they were laughing, one of them came from behind him and pulled the back of his dhoti out, and another person put their hands around his eyes, and another person pulled his sika out, and it was a very embarrassing situation. So what could he do? Whatever curses, whatever threats, they just laughed and laughed and laughed. And as a cowherd boy, he said, "I'm going to tell your mothers what you did to a Brahmin." And on his way, Krishna met him and said, no, they're just joking, they're just laughing. Here's some laddus and we'll dress you again." And they all played together in Gwalpokar. And from there, we come back to Manasi Ganga, where we began our parikrama. I'll end my little talk tonight, and then we're going to ask some of our special guests to all come on stage and give blessings and words of wisdom to all of you. This is a letter that I recently received. Before I settled in India, in the early 1980s, through the mid-80s, I was traveling and going to colleges and universities in America. We started several centers in these areas. And at that time in Cincinnati on McMillan Street, which was the main road of the college, the University of Cincinnati with 40,000 students, we were right across the street from the college. Do you want to hear this story? Yeah. And our next door neighbor on one side was an all-night rock and roll bar. And they had massive amplifiers with music. And on the other side of us was a pizza restaurant, which wasn't so loud, but sometimes it distracted devotees. So I remember on the weekends trying to sleep in our little center. We had a temple room and some little ashrams. The music was so loud, and it wasn't classical Vedic ragas either. It was so loud. It was like, this was my realization. It was like trying to go to sleep
in the middle of two stereo earphones packed together on full volume. That's how loud it was. But somehow or other, we learned to just chant Hare Krishna and go to sleep. Because that, you can... And when there's necessity, it's amazing how human beings could adapt and adjust. There was one little girl whose family was becoming devotees. Her name was Sonia. And one of my dear god sisters, Ladini Devi, she was traveling to all the different centers that we started, and she was taking care like a mother of all the people we were cultivating. And this little girl, Sonia, she was probably about 4 years old or something like that. She followed Ladini around everywhere. She just was completely attached. But what I found is Ladini Devi Prabhu, she had such a spontaneous, natural enthusiasm to serve. She just was infused and was like a fountain of love for Krishna that anybody she came in contact with just never wanted to leave her. It's incredible. In Columbus, we would do Harinam Sankirtan, and she would make popcorn. Do you know what popcorn is? And she'd pack it in little bags with her own hands, and while we'd be singing, she'd just be smiling and giving out popcorn while she was dancing in the streets of America. She'd be dancing ecstatically, giving popcorn to everybody. And people would just follow her wherever she was. Unbelievable. So this little Sonia, she was very deeply affected by Ladini. Actually, I first met her when she was 3. I just verified this. When she was 3 years old, that's when she first started coming. And a little later, Ladini Devi became very, very wonderful in Prabhupada's service in Africa, under the auspicious guidance of His Holiness Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj. And last year at our drama festival, there was a whole drama about her life. So this letter I'm about to read is from Sonia, who later on became initiated. She was given the name Radha Sundari Devi. And time has its ways of evolving people's lives in different ways. And that little 3-year-old Sonia, now she's Radha Sundari, and she got married. She had a son named Braj Mohan, who is now 3 years old. And, you know, little me, I'm kind of just watching. You know, she was 3, and now he's 3, and where am I going? I'm about the same size. I'm getting a little smaller, I think, actually. But her son, her 3-year-old son's name is Braj Mohan. And he was... His father is Ananda Tirtha Prabhu, whose mother is a dear disciple of Srila Prabhupada. They were both born, or very early age, they came to the path of bhakti. I'd like to share this with you, because it says something about what we could learn from even tiny little children. When I read this, it really affected my heart. Are you ready? Thank you.
This came
this year, just after Radhastami.
Radha Sundari writes, "For the last few days, we have been reading Radharani's pastimes in preparation for Radhastami. One night at bedtime, we read the pastime of Krishna waiting in agony at Kokilavan for Radharani to come. When she did not come, he sent Subal to exchange places with her and send her in his guise. After we read the story and turned off the light, I heard my three-year-old son, Braj Mohan, breathing deeply and then sniffling. I thought he was congested."
Radha Sundari, in her motherly affection, continues the letter.
"Then he suddenly burst into piteous crying. In a choked voice, he told me that it was too sad for Krishna to be separated from Radharani. I tried so hard to convince him that they are never separate from each other. And finally, he calmed down, only to start crying again after a few minutes, because it was too painful to think of Krishna separated from Srimati Radharani. As I tried to console him, I started thinking about the heartache Krishna experienced in Radharani's absence. And I also started to cry. It was amazing to share that beautiful devotional sentiment with little Braj Mohan. I was just reading the pastimes with my eyes, but he helped me to actually enter them with my heart. What a blessing." Thank you very much. I'd like to invite all of our special guests to come on stage together. His Holiness Giridhar Swami Maharaj, His Holiness Dhanadhar Swami Maharaj, Shamdas Ji, Sridhar Ji, Yaduvar Prabhu, Tribhangananda Prabhu, Nitai Chaitanya Maharaj, great sannyasi from Africa, Malati Devi Prabhu, Braj Leela Devi, and Ekavir Prabhu. Everyone, please come on the stage. And if there's anyone I'm missing, please. Huh? Oh, Ramdas Prabhu. Where is Ramdas Prabhu? Ramdas Prabhu, also, please come.